Hello.
Howdy.
Jamie here, Andrew. Before you listen to this red hot episode, we're just letting you know we have a Patreon. $5 a month. And what does it get you, Drewy?
It gets you a 2 bonus episodes a month, possibly 3, depending on how the weeks align, I guess.
Exactly.
Every 2 weeks, we got a hot new episode popping at you. We've got offcuts, things that we couldn't fit into other episodes. Plus, we do standalone stuff. We've done some oral history of Sydney comedy. We're getting it. We're looking to get that kicking off again. And otherwise, just like a lot of fun. Just us goofing about.
Enjoy the episode.
Peace.
Let's do it. Hello, welcome to another episode of Community Notice Board, a podcast about suburbs we grew up in, local landmarks, hometown heroes, and coming-of-age tales. We've got a very special guest in the studio today, a very funny comedian, AJ Lamarck is here. Hello. How are you, AJ?
I'm very well. I'm very warm. I'm very sweaty. After the rains comes the warm.
You look immaculate.
You said you were going to be sweaty a sweaty mess. And
Jack's way sweatier than this.
Okay, we take 2 steps and we're like, God, I need to put liners under my underarm.
Dude, I walked today up like maybe 2 blocks to a cafe up the road, and this shirt was like, I had the gross bit in the middle that get, that's where I sweat first. Yeah. And then, it's just disgusting.
That's what I have as well. I don't really get it on the armpits. I get it in that little bit right there.
And then at the back.
Yeah.
There is the criticism like online of like straight white guys doing comedy in black t-shirts and jeans. It's like, yeah, you know why? Because any other color looks like we've pissed our front constantly.
That's why I do it.
That's the only reason I would do it. I've said it before on the pod, but I made a mistake of going gray once during a headliner set in the middle of summer.
Oh.
Called attention to it, bombed even harder. Yeah. 20 minutes of silence.
All my act outs are always from the elbows down.
Your famous penguin bit.
Did you ever, we mentioned this on another episode, did you ever get the special deodorant that stops you from sweating?
Oh, dry claw.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, let me tell you about dry claw.
I was a dry guy too.
It's prescription only, and from what I hear, it's been taken off the market because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And in what way? Which fun medical way does it harm you?
I think it clogs your pores.
The idea is that sweat is supposed to come out, and dry claw doesn't act as like an antiperspirant deodorant. It's just a seal, like a wax seal.
So it doesn't clog your pores. It like seals them shut, like with like you, what's that word where you're suturing?
Yeah,
it's like it burns them shut. And I went to the this is like, you know, when I was 20, and I went to the doctor, and I was like, Doc, I'm sweating too much. What do you got for me? And he says, all right, okay, I got this thing. It's a deodorant. It's called Dry Claw. It's prescription only. I give you a script. It will stop you sweating, but it will cause severe pain, is what I recall him saying. And you go and you get it, and I'm like, I put it on, and it burns. It just burns. It's like acid, and you don't sweat. There is that, but you get gnarly rats. So it's like, what ends up happening is you put on the Dry Claw, stops you sweating for like, I don't know, 48 hours or something. But then you got to put so much moisturizer on your armpit that then just get moisturizer stains in the same place you've got the sweat stains.
Then you become a goo man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this, I've actually run out of deodorant at my house, and so I'm rocking baking soda under my arm.
I love that natural home remedy.
I'm saying.
Did you look it up, or were you just like, what's in the cupboard? I'll chuck this on.
Nah, someone told me.
Self-raising under the arm, see what happens.
Yeah. Bit of Capilano honey under there.
I think it's fine.
You may have heard his voice as well. We have a special guest host, Jack, while Alex is in Melbourne.
Alex is in Melbourne, just started his run. He's killing it. So we got one of our favorite guests, Jack, to talk to AJ.
Yes,
and so AJ, the suburb we are covering today, or town, is Laubach in Germany. But you've been around. You're a man of the world.
Yes, I am. That's a very polite way of calling me a slut. But
she has.
Oh, we can say that? This slut has gone all over the globe.
We record this from the top. We're in. I have. It's been a very odd time. So basically I'm from the UK, and back at university my parents had already moved to Australia, so it was weird kind of being like not a tourist, but being an international in your own home country, because all of your home base and everything that you like kind of rely on resource wise is 24 hours away. And so during the summer holidays at university, it was either like I can try and figure out where to store all of my stuff for like 8 weeks and then pay for that and then pay for flights to come back here, or if I can find some sort of job somewhere on some kind of literally community notice board at university or some whatever program, I'll jump on it and we'll see where we land. And by virtue of doing that, I've ended up in some really random places, including Laubach.
Okay. So Laubach, so you were working in a camp? there?
Yes. So
never good when you hear camp in Germany, is it?
No.
They have high ropes courses, the same as every other.
It's got to fly every fog.
It just comes off the tongue a little weird.
That kind of camp.
Okay. It does. You just kind of naturally want to put the F sound. Yeah. You don't want to, but your heart goes, do it, do it, do it. So you kind of might be aware of like the Camp America type deal. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's got a bigger branding, and this is like the German knockoff. And it's exactly the same thing. You kind of work and you entertain these very rich German kids for a week whose parents don't want to see them, so they spend a lot of money sending them for a week away at a time.
Yeah.
But the only main differences between Camp America and Germany, besides the location, is just you teach English in the morning.
Oh.
So you, instead of doing like a morning activity, you just teach the kids English. They get better because they're
talking like to a native. That's like instead of friendship relationships or like as well as?
Well, to be honest, sometimes I was like, what do you guys want to do today? You can do crafts. Go for it. And I'll just speak English at you and it counts, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have no formal qualifications.
It's a perfect way to teach English, just being like, all right, so the Americans, they do dodgeball. If you cry out like fuck or shit occasionally, that's good. Full marks, baby.
Full marks. But it's quite interesting because like culturally, the biggest thing that caught me off guard is children in Germany aren't necessarily reprimanded in the same way for swearing as they are in England. So like, you know, high school, if you said fuck in your class, your teacher would be like, how dare you get outside right now? But saying shit is just like saying water.
Okay.
It means nothing.
Okay.
And so, like, all these kids are running around, like, shit, this. And
I need a glass of shit.
Yeah. And like, here you go.
Carbonated or non-carbonated?
Depends what I'm eating.
So, you go there. So, that was a question I had, but it turns out you've pretty much answered already. So, these kids are exclusively German. It's not like an American expat thing where rich kids are like, you know, like Americans be like, yeah, we'll send them to the fucking snow in Switzerland or something like that. Just anything to get them out of our hair for 3 months. But this is all Germans.
Mostly, actually, there was one Spanish family. There was two brothers who were 11 and their younger sister who was 8. And I can speak Spanish, so I actually got on with them a lot more because I couldn't really understand most of the German kids when they went full German. But I was like, I can talk to you at least. But they were the only kind of like rich people being sent because they want to improve their German. But these kids were incredibly wealthy. But do you know like when you watch 90s sitcoms and you see someone speaking British in an American sitcom and they've got the weirdest posh accent, Emily from Friends, you know, hello, oh gosh. She spoke, Ross. This 8-year-old spoke English like that.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Much, much classier and better and well-formed sentences than I've ever heard.
And you ask her why, and she was like, Emily from Friends is my favorite character of all time. People like Chandler, but I'm an Emily fan.
But it was the weirdest thing being in this role, because these two 11-year-olds, because they, her older brothers, they were very, very wealthy kids from Madrid.
And they spoke Cockney.
And they spoke, they were like, you're right, governor.
Apples and pears.
I mean, that would be the funniest thing. Like someone speaking fluent Spanish and being like, obrigado. And then you're like, okay, now in English. And they're like, all right, mate, here's a point. Like, yeah, it's like, all right, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But so they're the only kind of family that like I knew who were like from a different country moving in. The rest were like really wealthy kids of parents who just didn't want to see them over the summer.
Yeah.
And they very much had that vibe sometimes. Sometimes they were like just quite isolated and be like, I know my position in life and we will continue. And other kids were just like, someone seems friendly, I'm going to latch on.
That's cute.
My little heart.
I used to do childcare work at a French, this is in Canberra, they have a French school thing, which is weird. It's a full program, goes right through to high school, and it's for people who basically want to learn bilingually. So you have a lot of people who are, their parents just want them to learn French, but then you also have people who are like, their parents are like literally ambassadors from France or whatever, you know, they work in the embassy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not that common.
Well, in Canberra, there's a lot, you see a lot of that, right? But anyway.
Lots of French ambassadors.
Not ambassadors.
It's only ever one at a time.
Embassy work.
They're talking about the submarines. They're really trying to figure it out.
yeah, they need extra firepower to figure it out. Not out these submarines, god damn it. But it used to be hilarious because there's nothing funnier or cuter than like a four-year-old who's speaking French. Or like German, maybe not as cute. That's an aggressive language. But like Spanish, I imagine, that would just be goddamn adorable.
It is. It's very cute. I quite like the German language. I feel like having been immersed in it, maybe that's what they call Stockholm Syndrome. But I find it quite cute. And like when it's like the little kids would just be like in the morning and they'd be like, well, it's actually... a bit odd because, again, cultural differences. You don't really do small talk in German.
Mm.
It's not a like, you know, in Australia, you're like, oh, g'day, how you going? Yep. You good? Blah, blah. And you have that formality. You wake these kids up in the morning, they'd come to breakfast, and you'd be like, morning, how are you? And it's like, why are you asking?
What do you want to know?
What do you want to know?
I do not have secrets.
You have the secrets. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, first day, I was working there, and like first time in the country, I was like, oh my God, these kids are so rude. Mm. And the other teachers were like, no, you're asking silly questions. You don't care how they feel. They know that. And I was like, yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Valid.
Okay. I like how German language doesn't seem to fuck with hyphens. You know?
Yeah, they just add extra
huge, just epic compound words. Oh, yeah. Just 28 letter words that, you know.
As a teacher, is the makeup mostly Germans, or is it people from all over to kind of, you know, teach people English? Like, if that's like a component of it, I assume they're not like, all right, we're going to choose one English guy and then we'll stock the rest out with Germans. We'll feel it out. Mm.
Do you know what? It was more like that. Occasionally you'd have someone else who was English with you, but the idea was that you didn't speak German. So if the kids had to communicate with you, it had to be in English because you had no choice.
Yeah.
And they had no choice. Yeah. But all the German teachers, they could speak English quite well. And, you know, it's kind of like it's Germanic, Scandinavian. They all learn English as a second language. But if they knew they could speak German, why would you? Like, why would you speak English? And so my job was to be the force of English. To force English down the German's throat. That was my job on these camps. And and so it was quite isolating sometimes because then everyone would start, you know, the teachers would be tired. It's like 11 p.m. at night after having these kids all day. They all start speaking German because, you know, it's easier to converse. And you're just like...
Spooky campfire story.
Make room for AJ, everybody. Who wants to keep practicing their English? And they're like, we actually already know it.
That would be a good little like spooky campfire story, is telling the story of how the Allies beat the Axis.
hand me the torch.
So on the second day, I did this across a few years, and Laubach was the main town that I was in. And so on the second day of the first week that I was ever in Germany doing this job, we took the kids to a swimming pool. And it looks quite normal. It's kids. It's a swimming pool. There's other people there. It all seems fine. And then all of a sudden, it gets to about 3:30 p.m. and the Blitz siren starts blaring. And bearing in mind, Laubach is a town that's probably like an hour's drive away from Frankfurt, deep in the German countryside. And I... really hadn't heard the Blitz siren since history class in high school.
Yeah. I haven't. Have I heard the Blitz? Do we have that on our soundboard?
Yeah, here it goes.
Guys, comedy's really hard.
And that's what they used to play when the Luftwaffe were flying over and the Brits would know.
Hastings' voice would be as loud enough to like let the whole town know that there's a bomb. Like,
oh, shit, the Germans are coming.
But that's the thing. Like, I was like, everyone else is calm.
Yeah.
Mm. I start freaking out because I'm like, where do we go? Who's bombing whom? I don't understand because that's such a specific sound. Mm. And I was freaking out. The teachers were like, what's going on? And I was like, and they were like, oh no, that's the sound that the pool's closing in 30 minutes.
Oh,
and I was
like,
so that's your sound for the pool's closing. And that's
that.
The United Kingdom sound for your town might be demolished, hide and protect your family. I was like,
I like that. That's German efficiency. Like, why would you, install a new siren?
Yeah.
You've got the siren.
Exactly.
We just changed what it meant.
I thought for a moment, I was like, it's out in the country. Maybe they don't even know, you know? It's like, Blitz is coming. Right. And you're like, it's 2014
like those,
now.
Japanese soldiers in like the Philippines they found in the 70s.
Yeah,
God, thought the war was still going.
Yeah.
Insane story.
The camel driver character in Gallipoli.
Oh, fuck. I haven't seen...
Less of a well-known reference, turns out.
I haven't seen Gallipoli since, year 9 English.
They meet a guy in the desert, and he's, like, just some outback guy who deals with camels, and he's like, oh, there's a war on? You know? Oh. And they didn't know. But, yeah, but the Japanese stuff, that's probably makes more sense.
Yeah, doing good replacing Al, buddy. I wouldn't have had that knowledge of Gallipoli. So let's describe Laubach. Like, it's a pretty small town, right? Like, like you said, it's an hour out. So, like, in terms of you being on camp, are you just staying in that site the whole time, or do you have time to go and explore and see what's going on there?
Yeah, so the first week that we went, so we got driven from the UK to Germany because it's relatively close. And so me and a couple other people, there's a few camps going on. So there's a bunch of people from our university, and we're all being split up across the country and getting dropped off. Mm. So we drive in a white van across Germany to the deep countryside. I have no clue where it's going. And we get to Laubach as the town, and we have the first day where the kids haven't arrived. And we're quite keen to explore because we're like, oh, this is beautiful. So that first day we were able just to run around and look at everything. And it was quite surprising just how Hansel and Gretel this whole place was. Like, I just kind of imagined. Yeah. And everyone was just two small brother and sisters running around. And I was like, where are the adults? And they were like, that's the whole point.
Don't forget your breadcrumbs.
And don't get into the oven, no matter what happens.
Don't get in the oven.
Just some poor baker being like, why is everyone tearing up my bread?
People hate me in this town. I'm just trying to perfect a sourdough.
But as a poor student, that's free bread. You could follow these little kids around.
Oh, my God. I've got a free holiday and free bread. It was just a socialist dream. But it was these cobblestone roads and these very kind of gingerbread house looking townhouses. There's a giant I think there's a cathedral. They all merge into one, but the beautiful rolling. I was just astonished with how beautiful this place in the middle of nowhere that I've never heard of, and most people would never heard of.
I did see they have like a big castle, right?
It's castle?
That kind of like, because the town's so small that it really does like just lord over the place. Like, it's so massive.
Yeah, castles in Germany do rule. I've done the castle in Germany. You go to the top and then they're just like, and you've walked all the way up. You could walk back down, or we could take you in horse and carriage. And you're like, horse and carriage? And then you just get to, it's like me and three mates just being in a horse and carriage, being like, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Just all the whole way down. Yeah,
Jamie really tore it up in his 20s. Yeah. Just the boys in a carriage.
It's the original Kentucky tour. Yeah.
I mean, I did get alcohol poisoning that night, if that helps you.
That helped. That's good. That's what I prefer.
But they were. It's this kind of really foreboding. And one of the camps is actually in that castle. I was on a camp that was kind of in a school that was obviously not on because it was the summer holidays and we took that over. But one of them was in the castle, and apparently the staff were getting creeped out constantly because it didn't have proper infrastructure because it's all heritage. Mm. You want to start drilling in to put in a cable network and
Wi-Fi. Up a flat screen TV.
So literally they would be carrying around at some points to get through some stairwells, like candlelights or their phone or whatever to try and like, but then you've also got kids running around you don't know. And these camps can sometimes have like sometimes 20 up to 60 children. You're in a castle and then just creepy kids laughing down the stairwell. You're supposed to go down. And I would be like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not that. I would just be sitting in my room being like, German ghosts are going to get me.
Yeah. I mean, also like camp is the original like slasher film location as well.
Yes.
It's like, all right, I guess I'm on camp. I'm a cool 20 something. I'm having a beer after. Oh, no, I can hear laughter. I'm going to get got. Like,
Yeah.
I was trying to look up, but before like we came here, why the summer camp was chosen as like the location for slasher movies, hoping that it would all centralize on a bite-sized piece of information I could relay in podcast format, and everyone be like, "That's cool." It's very complex. There's so many stories. I think it's basically like a horny teen. Like that's where horny teenagers go. Like get them, get rid of them.
Oh yeah, it some sort of weird Kellogg conspiracy where it was like they're horny and they must be punished on
pop
culture?
That's how a lot of them go.
That's the original like final girl meme.
If a woman has sex in a horror movie, she's gonna die pretty soon.
Do you know that's why a lot of American men are circumcised because of Kellogg's.
Because of Kellogg. Oh, because wasn't he all like?
Yeah. He was a
the
very
cornflake stops masturbation.
Yeah.
What is
no? It's literally that. He held these views that were very kind of like kind of
muscular
heightened Christianity. Yeah, exactly.
He was all like bro-y Christianity.
You shouldn't wank because you know that's like the devil will get you.
So it's the original No Nut November.
Yes, No Nut Cornflakes November was the original, and then they were like, "Well, cornflakes doesn't nutty." What's the one that begins with nut?
Crunchy Nut
Crunchy
Cornflakes
November. Crunchy Nut November.
I would love Crunchy Nut November. Yeah, that's some good cornflakes.
Just crunch a nut in November, brother. And the Kellogg's inventor is like, "This is not what I wanted."
But that's the thing. And then he started one of those, things that, cultural things that start catching on with everyone about being circumcised stops guys from masturbating. Mm. And so now most Americans get circumcised because of a rumor that he started.
Because of Mr. Kellogg's and his weird ideas. That's crazy.
That cornflakes cock is really messing with your cornflakes cock. Okay.
Well, then it worked because my slasher camp thing went nowhere. But in comes AJ, saves the day with the cornflakes story. And we did get a bite-sized piece that can be used on a podcast. There we go.
Beautiful.
There we
go. It always works out in the end.
Yeah.
I have a little story. I don't know. Oh, yeah. You've got one, Kirk.
Yeah.
This is something I found sort of looking around the area, because it's the town, like you said, it's not far from Frankfurt, right?
Yeah.
And it's that state is called Hesse.
Mm-hmm. Hessen, yeah.
Hessen. So this one, this is something that happened like quite close to Laubach in the state of Hessen in during the war. This is probably why I've got the war on the brain today. So this is in 1944. And Prince Wolfgang of the House of Hesse was forced to flee his family's ancestral castle outside Frankfurt for fear of invading Allied troops, taking it away by force. It says it was a very valid concern, obviously. The US military had a habit of seizing European castles and using them as rest and recuperation centres, which is like they've turned them into the camps that you describe. Like the soldiers are all creeped out. They've got their little candles running around.
They're using a flying fox as well.
Yeah, woo!
I want to go on a tire swing.
So before he left, however, he ensured the security of his family's treasures and most importantly, the Hesse Crown Jewels, which was a collection that included dozens of rings, bracelets, tiaras, necklaces, and more than 500 carats of loose diamonds.
Wow.
So this is, yeah, that's the big haul. So what he did, he placed the jewels in a zinc-lined box and buried them deep in the dirt floor of the castle cellar, then poured concrete over the top, and then built an entire secret room around his little, like, stash.
Oh, wow.
Right.
You're right. But he was no match, however, for Captain Kathleen Nash of the Women's Army Corps.
Nice.
So when American forces ultimately claimed this castle, Kronberg Castle, a plain-looking woman in her early 40s.
Brutal.
Don't know why. Yeah. I have no idea why this article mentioned that detail. Oh. So, yeah, this ugly broad was put in charge of... so she's put in charge of running this rec center. So that's her job. They're like, nice. they get the castle, nice. They turn it into a thing, they install the flying fox, and then they put her in charge. and it says, like, by all accounts, she's squeaky clean service record. So they were like, we can trust her with this castle, right? But then...
We can trust this plain Jane with a cool castle.
Hey, I've read your CV. I've looked at your LinkedIn. You've got a lot of great recommendations. Would you like to own a castle?
Yeah. And you're ugly as fuck, would you like? It says, over the course of many legendary drinking binges at the castle's bar, she fell for Colonel Jack Durant. No, I wish it was white, right? So this dude, Jack Durant. November 5th.
What did he look like?
He said he was dashing.
Dashing.
He said he had no blue jeans, black t-shirt on. Hang on.
I got new covered, Air Maxes, bro. Talk about my Air Maxes.
Covered head to toe in dry core deodorant.
my purple and yellow Air Maxes, bro. You didn't even talk about them.
Oh, it's coming up. So November 5th, 1945, Nash sent a member of her staff, a Mr. Roy Carlton, to investigate a rumor he'd heard from a local about buried treasure in the castle cellar. After noticing two electrical wires that seem to disappear inside a stone wall, he busts out the sledgehammer and sledgehammers
his... heritage list.
You can't do that. UNESCO's going to have a field day ruining this guy.
He basically bashes his way in and he finds his secret room. He does a little bit more and further inspection. He notices a little patch of concrete looks a bit too fresh. Not quite matching the rest of the place.
We go, what does it describe what the secret room is? Like, is there a pool table in there?
I don't think, no. I like to imagine it's like when you pull a book and it spins around, maybe a trap door sort of situation.
It's not much of a castle if you can take it apart with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe that's the secret room. The rest of it is pretty sturdy.
That was just plywood.
Yeah, drywall.
Just making the day people have rolled up with... like catapults and trebuchets and there's just one guy being like, guys, it's a bit much. You didn't have to. I know you love an IKEA build, but come on, let's just try to get in here.
Maybe it was Thor. Thor fucking sledgehammered his way in. They find this patch of concrete. They find the box. They dig it up and they're like, fucking jackpot. So Nash orders this Roy Carlton guy to deliver the treasure trove to her personal quarters for safekeeping. And she immediately calls up her lover, Jack Durant. Later that day, Durant asked a friend, Major David Watson, who'd overheard some of the earlier telephone conversations, about the legality of keeping valuable property that had been abandoned by Germans.
There's too many people in this conspiracy already.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Should we just guess what happened? Jack Durant runs off with it.
Okay.
Okay.
If you want to place your bets.
Oh. maybe there's some sort of lover's quarrel in here with one person killing the other.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Yeah. I like to think that the ghost of Wolfgang comes back and curses them Tutankhamun style.
Okay.
Damn. That would rule.
Big assumption. Because Wolfgang is alive at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. Or Kathleen gets the jewels, has the world's biggest glow up, and becomes a supermodel.
Oh, that's hot.
Yes.
All right.
Well, allow me to read on because I can't remember.
And it's much more boring than all three guesses.
I would love it to be one of these guesses. No, that's the end of the story. He sees like, so hypothetically, say I found 500 loose diamonds. Is that legal? Can I keep them? He eventually spills the whole secret because the guy's obviously like, dude, just tell me what's going on. He spills the whole secret. Nash, Durant, and Watson. So now there's a lover's, you know, love triangle sort of situation emerging. I'm making that part up to make it seem more
interesting. It's juicy.
So they gave several gems to this Carlton dude to buy his silence. Then they decide to remove the jewels from their settings so they could pawn some of them in Britain and then mail the rest back to the US. Some 30 boxes were shipped out of the country in the following weeks, mostly to Nash's sisters in Wisconsin and California, but some to Watson's parents, who were also in California, and Durant's brother in Virginia. They got away with it for several months, but then as Princess Sophie of Greece prepared to marry Prince George Wilhelm of Hanover, she asked her cousin, Prince Wolfgang, who is very, very much alive and well, for a selection of the Hesse crown jewels to wear as she walked down the aisle. He's like, no worries.
No worries, brother. It's in my secret room. Exactly. Made of Play-Doh.
He's like, I'll make things happen. And he goes... He got just a servant to go to Kronborg Castle with instructions to retrieve the jewels. But upon discovering them missing, the Hesse family filed a complaint with the authorities. It didn't take investigators long to determine who was behind the theft, and the three Americans were arrested, tried, and sentenced to prison. They did a crime and they were
AJ was the closest.
Punished for it.
Yeah. AJ, he was like, they were cursed.
Like, yeah, true, actually.
Came back to the story and was like, I'll fuck you up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I was kind of right too. Like, Durant did run off with them.
Yeah, but closest I came is Drew making up a love triangle.
I didn't expect the Greeks to get involved.
Got involved.
They came out of nowhere.
That was the twist.
Although surely it's some, like, if they're like, hey, the jewels are missing, you could be like, wow, yeah. Hitler's taken a lot of stuff from all of us, brother. You could just blame it on like wartime stuff.
I'm sure that was
unless you're wearing all the jewels, being like, oh, I have no idea.
Turn it up to court like Flavor Flav.
Yeah. What's up? Also, they call me Bling Bling Kath now.
I have a weird thing with the name Kathleen, right? So back in the UK when I was in my early teens, we lived in Hertfordshire, just north of London, and we had a garden. And one day, incredible storm rips out all of the fences, right? And so they go in and my dad's like, okay, we're going to, you know, dig it all out and do it again. And so whilst they're trying to dig further foundations for the poles for the fence, they find a tombstone.
Whoa.
And like, it's the UK. It's a very kind of, there's layers and layers of history on everything. So it's not too rare to find that. But we get the tombstone. It's dug out. There doesn't seem to be a body or anything. It just seems to be commemorative tombstone. And the name on the tombstone is Kathleen Vida Jones, which is Kathleen Vida Jones.
Is Vida in inverted commas?
Vida, now. But like, and she only died in 1989, and I want to say this is early 2000s. So,
oh, what? That's not okay.
I was expecting like 1800s. Yeah,
no,
I was thinking like Roman. Coins and stuff. You know, the layers of history, time team, history.
There's layers of history in England. If you dig, you can find something as old as 10 years.
Did you find a skeleton?
No, we were too scared because we were like, well, there's no body and we don't want to dig to find a body because that just seems weirder. Mm. And we don't really want to be doing that.
What we should do is we should build a school camp on the grounds and then the ghost of Vida will come through.
We'll keep
and
digging
them.
To find the jewels of Kathleen Vida. But also Kathleen Vida Jones as a name sounds like a drag queen trying to do Catherine Vida Jones. Catherine Zeta Jones. Yeah.
That's perfect.
That was my first thought. Yeah. It's like Catherine Zeta Jones is not who she says she is. And she found this like dead body. and stole the identity in 1989.
That was not my first thought.
That's the original Avril Lavigne, you know what I mean? Yeah. Avril Lavigne died, apparently has been replaced by... Have you heard that rumor?
Yeah. No. There's the same with the guy who... Because I looked this up this morning because my daughter's really into it. The original guy who hosted Blues Clues, he got into drugs and killed himself and he was replaced with... No, he's fine. He writes a bunch of episodes of the new Blues Clues, it turns out.
Oh, really?
His main concern with leaving Blues Clues was that he was losing his hair and he didn't want to be bald on screen. Oh. And so in the reboot of Blues Clues, you better believe that motherfucker is always wearing a hat. Like, it's like, wow, he really was just that vain. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, right. So no heroin addiction?
No, nothing bad.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Just didn't want to host kids' TV for the rest of his life.
Damn, I bought that one. Yeah. That's crazy.
Here's a little little accoutrement for this story.
Great job. You can speak French. How was that?
Très bien. I can't, but let's go for it.
You just embarrassed him by saying very good.
Authorities basically, they recover three jars of diamonds. Mm. And then there was some gold buried on a family farm in Virginia, and they found a 36-piece jewel-encrusted gold flatware set that Nash's sister in Wisconsin had been using as everyday eating utensils.
Fuck yeah.
Which is fucking awesome.
That is so cool.
But by the time the thieves were caught, basically, it's about a third of it they recovered. So two-thirds of this stash is somewhere floating around, maybe like a pawn shop in the deep south in America.
I know that, genetically, we're closely related to apes and stuff like that. But the amount that people throughout history have found something shiny and dug up a hole in the ground and shoved it in just gives me very squirrel vibes. I'm like, there is a part of the human population that was like previously a squirrel in our
own. Magpies do that as well,
magpies
right?
Magpies do it.
They pick up shiny shit.
Yeah, they like shiny shit.
Why did we go, oh my God, this is so valuable. I'm going to put it in the mud for later.
I like these poor farmers in Wisconsin who are like a gold set and they're eating their mashed potatoes off it. That rules.
I like that. I think that's better than having them in the cupboard.
Yeah, you want to get some use out of it, right?
I suppose, because it's kind of like the, what do they say, when you heist money and then there's always that like twist in the tail where like people are like, well, you can't use it anyway because it's marked sequential bills. And it's like...
That's what the pokey's for, bro.
Yeah, and it's like, brother, you know, I'm scooping up mash with this bill. Just straight up digging wet paper into mash and licking it right off.
Yeah. If you spent... This is last time
you
I was
You strike me as a guy who'd look for buried treasure in your life up until now, maybe.
Oh, like it's not fun to look for buried treasure.
Yeah, buried treasure rocks.
Do you mean like with a gold detecting?
With anything.
There was some
just intuition, maybe.
There were some guys in the UK a few years ago, and they were metal detectorists, and they found the hall of their life. They came across some actual Roman coins, they were like, oh, this is cool. And they were like, 1,000 years old or whatever. And they kept them, and then because the Brit... in England, they have all these laws about, that belongs to the people or whatever. And so they got, they tried to just sell it to a dealer and they got found out and they got sentenced to 10 years each.
Oh, that's a just for finding something?
Just for, finding, keeping and trying to sell, yeah.
Give them a slap on the
You've got to give
wrist.
It to the government so I can go in the museum. Yeah,
man, that would be so shit. Because you just go to the museum and be like, you can't stole everything anyway.
I'm saying,
what am I doing? I'm at least trying to profit off of it like a good capitalist.
Well, I think the British law is there because when people get their stuff back from the British Museum, we're like, we have to have something. We can't be completely empty. We'll force people to give a Roman coin and it'll just be one room filled with five Roman coins and two guys in jail.
This is the empty jug room. There was one or two jugs here once upon a time.
There's a page in an Instagram page and they're based in Sydney and I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I keep on getting random things. So basically,
community notice board.
And they do this podcast and it's about they have this fake rock and that you can kind of put stuff in, but it looks realistic from the outside.
Oh, like put your spare key in.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen and that, then they put like $100 or $200 in it and then they film themselves putting it in a random location around Sydney and they upload it and people follow that page and then run to the location to try and find the cash.
Oh. We are a simple species, aren't we?
Yeah.
Again, we love
digging ourselves. And what's the page called again? Instant follow.
But it's like, they put it on fast speed. So like they show like coming from a station or a landmark that you kind of might recognize if you're in tune
and
with
Sydney.
And
then the Benny Hill music over it as well.
And then you like, so people are running around like waiting for the video to upload daily and then trying to get there as fast as they can so they can get like $200 and pay rent because cost of living is crazy and the rich really just love toying with the poor and just making them run around Sydney being like, find the money.
It'd be funny if that was like the same thing that's happening with all those packages of cocaine they keep washing up on the beaches. Yeah. It's just some Instagram account. We're like, all right, we're going to let this one go.
I used to have a boss once, and she used to hide money around the workplace to see if I would steal it. To find out whether
as
or not.
As a test for you, yeah, specifically?
For just for me.
How many people are working in this organization?
3.
Oh, okay. So that's not too... Like, if it was like 50, I'd be like, wow, they're really singling it out. But like, when it's 3 of them on one's concert, yeah. Like, where's my money?
No, it was a dry cleaners. And so there was her, she owned it.
Yeah.
And there was me. And I stood at the front counter and said, what would you like today, please? Whatever. And then there was the guy who used to do the ironing or the pressing, right? And and so you've had all these clothes hung up. And she used to put like money. She'd put like money in like clothes pockets. Like around the shop, and then just see if I took it.
Isn't that a bit of a like finder's fee? Like if you
imagine, she was just trying to suss me out. I think she told me about it like 6 months later.
So she wasn't targeting you because you seemed like the type or anything. Like she was just like it's kind of like a. Yeah. Her version of a probation period, sort of. If he steals money in 3 months.
I think that was kind of what it is.
And did you take any?
No.
Did you find it ever?
Yeah.
And what did you do when you found it?
Oh, I thought about it.
Yeah. But you just gave it to her and were like...
No, I left it there. Oh. I left it in there every time. Yeah.
That's just so random.
Yeah. And then like you're so like, cause, and then you kind of beat yourself up and, nah, I could have taken that $50. And then like you find out a few months later, it's like it was a test and you passed. Well done. I'm like, oh, cool.
Not going to lie, it sounds like one of those annoying LinkedIn posts about a CEO talking about, you know, like when they're like, oh, I have this company, I did the bare minimum and aren't I great? Mm. It's like I try to psychologically manipulate my employees and then they turn out to be good and I'm a great guy. So like buy my products. That's exactly... Yeah. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
The next
yeah, I thought it was strange behavior.
It is a bit odd. Yeah. I mean, it's just. But finding loose money and clothes as well, at one point you'd just be like, all right, who are our clients here? Every second person that comes in has money in their jack of pocket.
It was a dry cleaners in Wollstonecraft, so yeah.
Oh, makes total sense.
A lot
of suits,
a lot of money.
But it also wouldn't work in the UK because our money is not waterproof.
That's true.
We have
the best money in the world.
You'd be like, how did this get through the wash?
Yeah.
And like not, like that was my first thought. I was like, it didn't get ruined in the wash. Oh, that's good money.
I found a bag of Coke that went through the wash once. That was disappointing. Same workplace.
Really?
In a suit.
So I take it that was ruined.
It was, I think it went to the races because it was a suit and it had grass stains on it.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of, and actually, I don't know, like, because normally if you get cocaine wet, it goes transparent and just sort of more or less disappears. So I don't know what this was, but it was like, anyway, I don't know.
It's cut with something. Hectic.
I guess so, yes. So
have you ever been to the races?
No, never.
I have, yeah.
How was that?
It's like, it is fun. Like, it's ridiculous. I feel like it's a thing, like, you do in your early 20s, especially, like...
You were disappointed there were no carriages when you got there.
I wanted was to take a slow-paced horse and carriage.
They do this better in Germany, guys. sorry.
I remember I was dead. I was like really sick at the time when like you could still go out when you were sick and no one
looked at you.
Yeah. But like I had a American NyQuil, you know, the like super strong like cough syrup.
You're doing scissor at the races?
Yeah. This guy's on some lean.
Dude, bruh.
Well, I mean, that makes it sound way cooler than what happened. I got paranoid that I was carrying and checked it in at the train station. I went to Central Station and was like, can you hold on to this for me? I don't want to get in trouble at the race. Because I thought maybe there'd be like a security gate or something. I could have walked in with it. I could have been pouring it into my curb.
A sniffer dog comes by and starts sitting down in front of you.
Yeah, and he's like, this guy's got a cold.
Is that a normal thing you can do at Central Station?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't know where.
Like
where?
Right.
Well... I mean, it won't surprise you after that story. I did spend like 20 minutes researching it, much to the annoyance of my girlfriend at the time, being like, just throw it in the bin. And I'm like, I can't. It's imported. Like, I took it from America.
Were you planning to come back?
Yeah, I went back and got it.
Okay.
Oh, wow. They like hold stuff for you.
Yeah. Cool. Nice. It's like a code check for American cough syrup.
Is it an illegal product or not?
No.
No.
So you're just like, can you look up?
Yes, I know.
I don't want to get told off for bringing Listerine to the zoo. You better. Can you look after this?
Well, I would never bring Listerine to the zoo. I would check that in at North Sydney Station. But yeah, it was just the thing where I was, I'm dead serious. I was, I mean, I was too, I should have known better. But like, I like, it just kind of like.
What did your girlfriend say?
Oh, she was very mad at me.
What did, just like, what are you doing?
Well, they're just like, you're being an idiot. Like, why are we wasting time at Central Station while you're looking for this check-in counter that you swear exists? And then when it exists, I was like, it exists. And then she's like, but we are 45 minutes late to meet all my friends. Because it was like her group of friends. I'm trying to impress them. It's like, well, my boyfriend's here. He's sick as a dog. He's going to infect you all. And he made us late because he was checking in cough syrup at Central Station. It didn't last that long.
That's all right.
I got another story about Lubbock. NyQuil back, that's important. Unfortunately, again, it is kind of about the war. But one of the most famous people from Lubbock, his name is Friedrich Kellner. And this is an article.
Not that famous.
Jack's never heard of him.
You've not heard of him?
I have. Oh, guess what he does? No. Oh, guess what he does before the reveal? No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, great. Friedrich Kellner. So it's from the war.
It is. Directly to do with the war.
Okay,
I'm gonna.
If you want a hint, I can say that it's kind of like on the good side, like the light side. It's not
the light side of the force.
It's kind of like a couple of not kinda Chuck. Like, yeah, but like Yoda. It's
What? Okay, is he? Did he defy the Nazis in some way? Perhaps is he some kind of Dietrich Bonhoeffer figure who possibly, you know, saved some Jewish people by throwing passports into a train.
Okay, so well, that registers as your guess. AJ, what's your guess?
Okay, well, that's a good guess, so I can't go with that. So I'm going to say he was a metal detectorist, and he was very well known for helping people trying to flee Germany from storing their cough syrup at the border so they wouldn't get pulled up.
You gotta check that on the trains.
That's what we'll get you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two fantastic guesses. I think he might have been an influencer. No, I actually know
what
he is.
Drew's the closest.
Do you actually know what he is?
Well, Jamie's told me.
You looked
about
at the same Wikipedia page.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, Guardian article.
Okay.
I will say that one of you two is bang on the money.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say who, AJ, but so this is. So the story about
they
Friedrich
took all the
Kellner.
Actual Nazis off the notable persons list.
You probably don't want them on there. But yeah,
they're all the notable people in Buenos Aires.
So it starts with the two words Adolf Hitler, wrote Friedrich Kellner in his private diary on the 17th of December 1942. Is the most cunning criminal of all time. He is the bloodiest tyrant, filled up with cruelty and unremitting hardness. He who seduces, inveigles, lies to, and cheats the nation has won millions of adherents and makes them into fanatical fighters for his heresies.
Okay, wait. This is him writing in his own diary.
This is him writing in his own diary,
That'll stop him.
Which are nothing other than a conglomerate of ideas stolen from other fanatics. True. Throughout the war, Kellner continued to confide to his diary his moral outrage at the crimes of the regime and his contempt for the gullible Germans who accepted them and believed in Hitler's lies. So he was born in 1885, and he was a junior court official, and he was an active social democrat in the Rhenish town of Mainz during the Weimar Republic. The social democrats were the real mainstay of German democracy during the 1920s, but despite their millions of adherents, proved unable to resist the Nazi seizure of power in 1933.
It's a different pod.
Thousands of their officials and representatives were arrested and imprisoned, and to escape persecution, Kellner moved to Laubach, a small town in Upper Hesse, scarcely more than a village, where he became administrator of the local courthouse. Here, his socialist sympathies were not known. Laubach, it turns out, at the time, was a hotbed of Nazism. Mm. And so, like, everyone there was like, we're from a country town. Nazism fucking rocks, dude.
And it's like, it's a spa town, right?
Nazis were good with the rural.
Is it the Laubach spa, spa town?
I mean, probably. Like, I didn't spend too much time doing that stuff, but it wasn't touched by the war. Like, the old buildings are still there.
Oh, that's nice.
Which, it's nice for their heritage and history, but it means that like, no one came through and destroyed
I just remember there was a lot of stuff about, like, the Nazi high command would hold a lot of their meetings in these spa towns and big, like, fancy hotels, and it would be, like, you know, a bit of R&R during the war.
Want to get a steam in.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is, like, they're saying, basically, that his diary about how anti-Nazi he was. Mm. Because he moved to Lubbock, he was surrounded by Nazis. So he didn't get, like, as nuanced a view of, like, every German town where there might be a few people being like, yeah, Hitler sucks. But this town was complete, like, nah, we're pro-Hitler, brother.
Okay.
And so it says, Kellner had no illusions about the Nazis' use of terror and coercion to keep people in their place. And this is, he wrote again in a diary entry, a harassed, tormented, intimidated, and extremely subjugated people had to suffer terror without equal. The decent German has hardly any courage left to think, let alone to speak. Kellner himself felt he had to exercise extreme caution in voicing his own views. He was reprimanded by the town's former mayor for greeting him on the street with a good day. So, like, someone was like,
yeah.
That's because it's small talk. They don't
like, is it a good day? But the reality was, someone was like, good day. And he's like, no, man, you're supposed to say Heil Hitler.
Oh,
like, that's
yeah,
the greatest.
Yeah,
but he's not even here.
Yeah.
It's not even here. It's a nice day. God damn it.
Yeah. Come on, sunshine.
Yeah, come on, bro. We're in this nice spa town.
So it said, Kellner's opportunities for opposing the regime in any practical way were non-existent. So he's surrounded. Town of Nazis, can't really do anything of any use. But he did discourage his colleagues in the courthouse from joining the Nazi party. He would distribute leaflets dropped by Allied planes during the war and discreetly pass on what he heard on the BBC to selected colleagues. Okay. His opposition was of necessity almost entirely confined to the pages of his diary, which he kept to demonstrate to future generations the criminal nature of the Nazi regime during the war. Yeah, this is not a diary in the conventional sense of the word. What Kellner did was to take extracts from the press, stick them in his own book, and comment on them at length from his own point of view. The material is produced in the original German edition, making a volume of more than 1,000 pages. So the English translation takes just the extracts with Kellner's handwritten notes to give a flavor of the diary's character. As a result, the narrative is rather repetitive, and Kellner is constantly commenting on the stupidity of the Germans and the evil of the Nazis and his moral indignation. His views on the war were certainly far from the naive optimism of the people among who he lived. My wife and I belong to the few Germans who, from the beginning, were convinced that the Germans would lose the war. At the start of the war, people were declaring the British would be defeated in a few weeks. In general, he noted, by the August 1943, the mood in Germany, not rosy. Though it was difficult to assess how most feel because too few expressed their opinion unreservedly. Fear still guards the forest. A few months later, he recorded the denunciation by an innkeeper's wife of a former court bailiff in Laubach for making insulting remarks about Hitler, a crime for which he was sentenced to 3 years in prison. So early in the war, he penned an 18-point list of the regime's crimes, including persecution and extermination of the Jews, as well as massive corruption, the suppression of free speech, and disrespect for people's religious convictions. Gleefully, he recorded the sentences meted out to party officials caught embezzling state or party funds. With disgust, he captured the refusal of a shop assistant in a grocery store to serve an elderly Jewish woman. I am a national socialist and I do not sell to Jews. So he's like, fuck this person. By October 1941, he was noting reports from soldiers on leave of inhuman atrocities on the Eastern Front as naked Jewish men and women were placed in front of a long, deep ditch and under the orders of the SS were shot by Ukrainians in the back of the heads and then fell into the ditch. The ditch was filled as screams kept coming from it. So he recorded the deportation of Laubach's Jewish residents in 1942, which he referred to as a dark chapter in the history of mankind, alongside newspaper cuttings advocating the elimination of the Jews from Southeastern Europe. So he's getting newspaper things, being like, the Jews have got to go, and him being like, you seeing this? It's crazy. Yeah. Like a stand-up, like Jay Leno. You guys seen this? You heard about this? It's crazy. So nor did he remain in ignorance of the mass murder of people with mental health issues being carried out on the direct orders of Hitler. Supposedly incurable patients, he noted in June 1941, were being brought to the nearby psychiatric hospital at Hadama to be murdered. He was rightly dismissive of the attempt to blow up Hitler at his field headquarters on 20th of July 1944, which you may remember was the plot of the Tom Cruise movie Valkyrie.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He called it, Kellner called it an amateurish enterprise. A revolution can be promising only on the broadest basis. A revolution only of officers is a still birth.
I thought that was his review of the movie for a second. Amateurish?
Yeah. Tom Cruise was pretty amateurish in this. It was a still birth of direction.
Yeah, I follow
Such
this guy
at Letterboxd.
Yeah. At the end of the war, enough was known locally about Kellner's political sympathies for him to be appointed deputy mayor of Laubach, and he played a leading role in reconstituting the Social Democratic Party in the town. Before long, he withdrew from public life, resuming his career in the judicial administration until he retired. Before he died in 1970, he showed his diary to his grandson, Robert Scott Kellner, who then was like, wow, this is like a full recount of the war from a German who opposed the war at the time.
Yeah, that's cool.
This kind of deserves to be seen. So Robert Scott Kellner, his grandson, transcribed, published, and translated it around and put it in libraries. So the amount of material and possible transcription efforts dissuaded publishers from the project for many years. So everyone was like, yeah, it's interesting, but it's really fucking long. But
an editor in there. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
you've
got a good plot. I like the main character. We just got to work on the narrative a bit.
Can we Valkyrie it up, maybe?
Yeah. Can we add a hot blonde? What's she do?
Or a plain Jane, maybe.
Tell me more about this wife.
So here's a little twist, like a little interesting bit of detail. So this thing is like kind of unpublished, like on a mass produced scale. It's shown in a few libraries until 2005, when a man called George H.W. Bush, who was a combat pilot in World War II, was like
a different one.
Well, George W. Bush is dead. The first Bush president.
So no, that guy.
Yeah, yeah, that guy.
The way he phrased it, man. Different guy.
Unrelated George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
But so he was a
George
combat
Herbert
pilot.
William Bush.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought you were doing.
George Bush, the senior, was like, I got to see this shit. And so he arranged for the diary to be exhibited in the presidential library, which kind of brought more public interest to it. Mm-hmm. And so from there, people were like, okay, well, this is kind of an important document. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of bring it into the public. And it was only published in English for the first time in 2018.
Wow.
So it was completed in about 1945. He stopped writing it basically once the war was over. Mm. Showed it to his grandson in the 70s, who was like, we need to fucking get this going. And then it was, you know, Bush did it.
Imagine rocking up to the local library with your dad's diary.
Yeah.
Just being like, you guys got to see this. Like, in this case, it's kind of true, but it is like, that's a hard sell.
Like, I'm glad that's not a common thing. I'm glad it's a good thing for things like this, but I'm glad it's also not a common thing for like people rocking up with, I've got this really hot book you're going to love, Marrickville Library. Yeah. Oh, the Marrickville people are going to love this. It's about me, and I'm a cop in space, and I need you to like...
All right, AJ, don't make fun of my novel on my podcast. I'm a cool cop in space. Jamie Kirk, Space Ranger. And if I found out you're the guy who's been removing my copies from Marrickville Library and throwing them in a muddy ditch, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah. So, wow. Well, I guess... The moral of the story is...
diarize everything.
George H.W. Bush is the U.S. greatest president.
Yeah, well, when people say Bush did it, what they mean is that...
he published a diary.
Yeah, he published a diary which brought to light the horrors of Nazism from a point of view of the Germans.
Hell yeah.
What an experience just being, like, in amongst everyone else is saying the complete opposite thing to you. Mm. And you're just running around like, I've got to blend in. Mm. Like, that would be a real...
Yeah, that would, but like if you think of like moments in history where like mob mentality is taken over and you're like, all I've got is my fucking diary.
Yeah.
Like it is a pretty crazy thing to think about, especially when you're like, maybe I should say something. And then a guy you work with is like, man, Hitler sucks. And people are like, all right, that's 5 years in jail.
Yeah.
I wonder if he had any normal entries in there amongst like the press clippings and then
jacked off today.
You set a new PB, jacked off five times. Yeah.
I think he was probably preoccupied with the horrors of Nazism.
I guess so. Yeah, that's fair enough.
But yeah, let's go back to summer camp. Do you? Because
I hope so.
AJ spent a lot of time there. Like summer camp is obviously full of stories from counselors and children alike. There, if you look up summer camp stories on Google, there are tons of embarrassing stories. Mostly about like I found one where there was like a kid shit his pants in the first day and was like, I did not shit my pants, and instead he put the pants in a bag and slept with it the whole time. Oh. People were just like, there's shit in these pants.
That's what Wolfgang should have done with his crown jewels, bro.
I'm not carrying my jewels with me.
Yeah.
Put them in a bag.
Certainly don't have my jewels on me.
Yeah.
Did the smell get out of the bag?
Well, people were saying like
Ziploc.
Shit in that
over,
bag
over the whole holidays. People were like, man, this room smells funny. And he was like, yeah, I don't know. And like he was like, yeah, there are stink bugs in town. And they're like, okay. And then, like, yeah, at the end of the camp, he was like, okay, someone needs to wash these pants. They're full of shit.
Why didn't he bury it like a good money launderer?
Yeah, throw it in the lake or something.
Yeah, so did you have any stories like that, embarrassing things that happened to students or counselors alike?
Well, I think there were a few instances where there were... Well, there's a couple. One of them's more embarrassing on my behalf, and the one of them is more just troubling about how you can indoctrinate children. But the first one is there is this, like, so being there for so long, and I worked across multiple years, so I'd go back in the summer holidays. So my German kind of naturally picked up. It's immersion therapy, right? Like, you start hearing out, like, you can pick up the tonalities. You know when kids are about to do something naughty. Mm-hmm. And it is the most thrilling thing in the world to yell at children in German. So, it really does incentivize you to just go full blast into German. But there's this song that, like, some of the kids sing. It's like, all the ducks are swimming in the water. You know that? Mm-hmm. They've got the same version. Alle Männer Enchen schwimmen in dem See. And alle Männer Enchen schwimmen in dem See. Kopf in das Wasser, Schwänzen in die Hohe.
Doesn't even rhyme.
Which means, I know, it's terrible. It means, like, all the ducks swimming, heads in the water, butts in the air. So, like, I took that rhyme and I was like, okay, Schwänzen must mean your butt. And so, like, I don't know how to say to children properly, like, sit down, especially when they're running around, they're not listening to English. So I was like, we're in the cafeteria and there's about 40 plus kids running around, and there's the German teachers, and we're like, they're all being havoc and just like being a mess, and no one's doing anything, and we need to get dinner started. So I was like, oi Leute, Schwänzen auf dem, like, chair. I forgot the word for chair, but I was like, Schwänzen auf dem chair. And there's this really fun thing with German that randomly words change definition for one specific occasion.
Okay.
And for everything else, it's fine. So Schwänzen, when it means animals, is like your butt generally. When it comes to people, it means assholes.
Put your asshole on that chair.
Put those fucking assholes directly on that chair.
I just told a bunch of 8 to 14 year old kids to put their assholes on the chair.
They'd have a field day with that.
Everyone bursts into laughter. All the teachers are crying. And I'm like, I don't understand what's happened. And someone translates, like, what the fuck is that rule? Why would you? It means butt, but it means like hind. Like, when you're hunting animals, it's like the hind.
Right.
And I was like, that's so stupid. Another one is the word guile. I'm not sure.
Yeah, means guile. Horny and cool.
It means horny and cool for everything.
It's in Space Ranger.
Yeah. It means horny and cool at all times.
At all times. It means, like sick. Like, you know, kids would use the word, oh, that's sick. That's sick. Right. You'd say, like, oh, that's so guile. That's so guile. Like, I love guile. And, but the only time you can't use that to mean cool is if you're referring to a human. So when I introduce the new teacher as, she's the guile. Just introduced this woman as a very horny person. I was like, hey kids, like, come meet the new teacher. She's so horny.
Sit your assholes down on this chair, kids. We got the horniest woman in camp.
And she is here to lay it down in English. And I was like, man, I'm so glad there's no HR department. Because I'd be arrested. But there was this one specific thing we, like, so I worked on one camp. This was actually in Laubach, but it was in Hessen. So they decorated all of the kind of holiday camp that I take over, the sections that we're living in and working in, with like different flags from different speaking English countries. And, so you kind of walk around, it's a bit decorated, yada, yada. And the staff room is located on the first floor. And I remember during the week, the kids really loved playing Capture the Flag. And we just let them play it all the time because we're like, great, you're happy. We get to chill out. Done.
Let's start with the Polish flag always.
And so, like,
guile.
I remember guile.
I am pretty guile.
And wait, so the staff room was on the first floor, and there was a little balcony outside, and they had like two Union flags dripping on either side of the balcony. Uh-huh. And I remember one of the kids was shouting my name. And he was like, oh, AJ, AJ, like, come here. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I walk out onto the balcony and I'm holding the rail. There's two English Union flags
kind of
draping.
Flags.
Yeah. Right. Draping beside me. And I'm like, hey, what is it? And this kid's like, oh, like, we've made a march. And I was like, oh, okay, you've made a march. All right, show me the thing, kids. You know, like, watch me dive type thing. Like, look at me. I'm so cool. We're like, okay. So this kid's trying to rally around the other, like, 20 kids he's got with them to try and get them all to do this march for me. And he was like, AJ, like, get them to do it. And so I was like, come on, kids, do your march. And he's like, oh, they're not listening. Tell them in German. And I was like, okay. So I said it once and they don't listen. He's like, you've got to shout. And I was like, come on. Yeah. So I was like, okay, Leute, ich will mein Dreiformation. And quicker than I could snap my fingers, these kids start marching in a 3x3 formation, chanting English Kampf, English Kampf. And do you know when you have an outer body moment and it's just me adorned with Union Jack flags telling these German youth to march whilst waving sticks with the Union flag as well? And I was like, look, I could see how it happens.
Charismatic leaders.
It just happens to circumstance. I was just like, gosh, I need to go inside and reconsider what I've done today.
So usually we finish this with two questions. These might not apply as much.
Well, we could do like a typical day.
Yeah. So, let's do that. So you're in Laubach. Mm. Tell us a typical day, your itinerary, morning, afternoon and night.
Mm. Oh, all right. So I'm not going to pick a Sunday because, like most European countries, Sundays, everything closes. Mm. And in Germany, everything closes. But the Turkish kebab place. So that's the most boring day in the world. But
not for me. We're talking breakfast, lunch, dinner, right?
A la carte all day, baby. So I would wake the kids up in the morning by like just banging on the door, be like, wake up, because I only got to bed a few hours before because they were staying up. Drag the kids to breakfast. We'd do a couple of English classes. And I would begrudgingly try and figure out something because I'm not a teacher. I just happen to speak English. So I'm like, okay, today we're going to do this. Write a story. Give it a hot go.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to sit here and wait for the hour to be up. Then they'd have lunch. And sometimes we'd go and do an afternoon activity. Like we'd go out to, they had like actually zip lining. This big kind zip lining in the German forest, which are also beautiful. And you know, sometimes we just get in a coach and take them there, or we would just do like activities in the afternoon. Like, you know, some kids would play football, other ones would do some craft thing. Then we get them to dinner, and then they would demand to watch, again, this is a fair few years ago now, then they would demand to watch Pitch Perfect. And when I tell you, I've seen Pitch Perfect more than 40 times, and I hate love it.
Yeah.
I've seen it so much that I'm in love.
Oh, okay. So you started off not liking it and then eventually it grew on you, or you hated it and now
you... So you got a real 1984 thing going.
Okay.
Again, Stockholm Syndrome of Anna Kendrick. Because they would... Yeah. It's all they ever wanted to do in
Our
the
rebels.
Our rebels. Our
In the news a lot.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Rebel does have a cause, apparently. And then you'd get them to dinner. Then you try and calm them down with a movie. Then you try and get them into bed without running around and causing a mess. And then after that, the teachers would hang out and we would just get drunk and like just have a good time with some like quite fun students. Because they were students as well, but they were just German students in the local town. So like you'd be hanging out and pissballing around and stuff. And that was quite fun.
Yeah.
Because everything you'd want to do on a camp as a kid, you just did it as an adult. So we'd set up the campfire. And
that's
like
I go on the zip line.
Literally. Be drinking beers, like eat all of the, like the candy and the stock foods and just be like, let's hang out.
That sounds
camp
fun.
Makes way more sense in that environment, I think. Yeah. You're growing up, you're allowed beers. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense for the kids.
There might be a bit of a business opportunity in like summer camp for adults.
It exists. I looked it up.
Damn it. Someone beat me to it.
Yeah. There is a summer camp for adults to get away where it's like, almost to a letter what you're dreaming
that
of.
Would be
it's
so
like,
fun.
Have a go on the Flying Fox, but also crack open a Budweiser while you do. Like, I think it was invented by like Andrew Bensley in the United States.
But hey, there's none in Australia. We could get that stage.
No, yeah, we could.
There's a place in the UK. Do you know like those ball pit like type adventure courses you take kids to. There's an adult version of that, which is like drink, but like you can drink, but it's also everything like that, but scaled up for adult size. So you're crawling around for the netting and going down an adult size slide into the ball pit.
I take my kid to those things all the time, and I think I'm more excited about it than she is. Yeah. Like, I'm always like, come on, let's get in the ball pit. And she's like, I just want to play with this cuddly toy dog. And I'm like, we're going in the pit. Make room.
Open that pit up.
Yeah.
You're allowed in the pit? You get in the pit?
Oh, I get in everything, baby. Oh, yeah. I'm going down the slide. The slide doesn't have enough traction. I fucking rip my shorts the whole asshole out. The whole thing. I walked home, didn't even realize that my butt was just flapping in the breeze.
Damn.
Okay, last question. Laubach, pretty picturesque town.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see yourself returning there as a permanent resident one day?
Oh, absolutely not. Unless I was like 90 years old.
Yeah.
And like, it's a very sleepy town.
Yeah.
It is so sleepy. You need to be moving at a mile an hour.
Yeah. Okay. It's a pretty expected answer, I think.
Yeah.
So finally, AJ, you've got Sydney Comedy Festival shows at the Comedy Store, I believe. Do you want to plug the show? What's it called?
Yeah. It's called A Beginner's Guide to Gay Cruising. All your fundamentals, very raucous and sassy.
You
and
said you weren't
show.
A teacher before.
I'm a teacher, but I'm teaching the children how to be a slut on a boat, really. So I went on a couple of holidays where it was like these big gay party boats in like the Caribbean and Europe, and you just spent like a whole week.
Yeah, journaling about it.
Journaling about it. Talking about the
just
atrocities
the
of the gays.
I hate this so much.
And every time I tell people that I've been on these boats or these types of things, they're like, oh my God, what happens? And then is it like this? And so I was like, I'm just going to put it in a show because people like, even the first time I did it, I was doing an internship with Gruen. And Will Anderson had seen on my Instagram that I was doing these things, and he was the first person that made me realize, oh, people are fascinating. He was like, oh, I'm like, you know, so you didn't, and then tell me more about this. And I was like, this is not the interaction I thought I would have.
Yeah.
In, you know, like my first kind of mini TV writing job, being like, yes, and sex on the gay party boat was like.
So not I was a workplace like, okay. conversation.
Yeah. It doesn't matter your sexuality or whatever you're like, the sordid fascination exists, and I'm willing to tell all.
So what dates are you doing the show?
They are Thursday the 9th to Saturday the 11th of May at 8:15 at the Comedy Store.
And I assume you can get tickets through sydneycomedyfestival.com.au and the Comedy Store website.
Yes.
AJ, social media, anything you want to plug?
Nah, I'm on it. Give it a hot go. I'm on TikTok and Instagram mostly, just at AJ Lamarck.
Excellent. Hell yeah. Jack, do you have any shows in Sydney Comedy Festival we need to plug?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Well, that saves us 30 seconds. We have a Patreon. You can pay $5 a month and get 2 bonus episodes a month. AJ, we are doing an episode with Jack in a couple of weeks called the Oyster Challenge because Jack believes he can eat 100 oysters in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Whoa.
That's what you told me at Drew's wedding.
Did I?
Yes.
This is not the challenge.
That is not. We are going to do power hour style, 60 oysters, 60 minutes, one oyster a minute.
Oh, well, I mean, that's just...
I laid that out to you. You called me an idiot and said I could do 110.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
so
did
we're gonna.
I say that?
Yeah, yeah, you did.
Okay, I mean, 60 and 60 is boring.
Yeah,
that's easy.
All right, well, I can we're gonna put you to the test.
Yeah. I can do 110. I've been reading quite a lot about anaphylaxis ever since I discussed these oysters.
Well, Shad Wicker warned us that maybe because of their aphrodisiac properties, you'd get too horny during the podcast.
I don't think that's the main risk. Do you guys have access to like an EpiPen or anything?
No, we're gonna need to use the Patreon money to buy one.
I don't know.
I mean, it'll be exciting, but I'm very much excited to the episode after that, which is an interview about the basis of diarrhea with a local doctor.
Well, that's the hospital system in Australia.
I'm just. I think it would be a really embarrassing way to die, like on your podcast, eating oysters.
You're not allergic to them, right?
But you can develop it. You can develop. I don't know. Someone got in my head. Someone told me about EpiPens and anaphylaxis. I just don't want
to. Well, we've been plugging this for weeks now, so you have to do it.
Have you been plugging it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I can do 110, bitch. 100%. Yeah, fuck yeah.
You're sent to the emergency room, and there's people there that's like, I hurt myself and my job and like all of these things. And it's like, what happened? It's like, I tried to win 60 horses in a minute, in an hour.
For a paywall episode of a podcast.
Yeah, paywall. That's a workplace accident.
Yeah.
If I die, I'll sue you.
Okay.
You've got your public liability sorted for oyster damage.
It looks like they're $70 from Chemist Warehouse, so we can buy
oysters.
I thought you meant oysters.
Don't get the oysters from Chemist Warehouse. Don't do that.
You got to get a prescription. We can buy an EpiPen.
All right. Apart from that, I think someone's knocking on our door.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.